Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing today?
I'm doing all right, Jim, all things considered. I've had to watch some of my rivals win championships in various sports, so I'm still, you know, trying to get myself back in a positive attitude, although I'm going to admit that this will be a long week.
You are hurting because the Knicks won a championship. As an Indiana Pacers fan, you just cannot handle that, can you?
No, I can't. This goes back to the 90s. I liked it better when neither of us had won a championship, but, you know, we'll survive. It's just, I should have expected this considering how my fandom usually turns out.
Next year is another year. There's always next year. Dustin, I have on my agenda a few things to talk about, including Brendan Sorsby and the fallout from that. We'll get to it. I don't know about you, but I think people are getting a little tired of Brendan Sorsby already. And I was fascinated. You and I were chatting before we get on the air about this fandom thing. We connect. I say, how are you doing? And you're essentially, I'm miserable. You know, you hate the Indiana Hoosiers and they win a national championship. You hate the New York Knicks. They win a championship. And it got us to do some deep thinking, because we're kind of deep thinking kind of minds. That's what we are. And I asked you, Dustin, explain to me how this sports fandom works. I mean, it's ridiculous. We're grown men and we live and die by some championship game, by some team called the San Antonio Spurs, with their best player coming from France, the New York Knicks, who, you know, from New York, so you're going to hate them because they're from New York. That's your MO there, which I get and I understand. I was at a party over the weekend, met some people I didn't know. They were we were talking sports, the NBA championship. One guy, he was from Philadelphia, so he was rooting for the Knicks because there's three Villanova players there. You know, it's like, how do you explain how this fandom works?
I don't know. Other than, so this is what I've always kind of wondered, and we were talking about this to an extent. So I grew up in Indiana, so I'm obviously a big-time Pacers fan, Colts fan. I cover Purdue. I'm a big fan of the Indy 500, like anything Indiana. I have a lot of state and city pride, right? So that part makes sense to me because there's – now, is it logical for you to go out and spend hundreds of dollars on tickets and gear and all this? I'm wearing a Pacers shirt now. Does it make sense? Probably not, like when you really think about it. But it gives you like a sense of state and city pride. What I've never understood, and Jim, you and I are kind of in the same boat when it comes to baseball. Indiana did not have a baseball team, so there was no team for me to really root for. I moved to just north of Atlanta. My mom lived there for a few years when I was growing up, and then I moved there and I lived there about 5 years. So I consider myself a quote-unquote bandwagon Braves fan. I don't live and die, but I do enjoy when they have a lot of success, and I do enjoy baseball. So I have friends who are fans of like the Yankees and the San Diego Chargers. Could not be two teams further apart on a map, right? And so that's the part that that's the part that I really don't understand, because you're right. Like we've both reached the age where athletes are not even close to our age range. I don't look up to them. Like it's, some people still try to get autographs, grown adults try to get autographs. Like it's just, it's a unique thing that we're in. But that's the one that, like, when you have multiple teams, and I get like, if you grew up in close to another market or whatever, you know, so there's a lot of people in Northwest Indiana that are Bears fans, because for the longest time they didn't have the Colts, or the Bears were closer even. So I get that, but it's just, you know, It's interesting how we put ourselves and gauge our happiness or sadness on the few bounces of the ball.
It, It is. I feel like I often have to explain myself as a New York Mets fan. And it's like, where the heck? I live in Pennsylvania. Well, I live in Northeast Pennsylvania, which is equidistant to New York as it is to Philadelphia. And when I was young and growing up, we had this strange new thing that not many other people had. It was called cable TV, which meant, you know, the Mets broadcasts went into our area, but not into my family's house because I was the only one who wanted to watch baseball. So little Jimmy would run next door, and there was this old man named Wilbur who lived there who was a huge baseball fan and a Mets fan. And when I was 8 years old, I started watching the Mets. And when I was 9 years old, so 1 year in, they win the World Series. And stupid, naive 9-year-old Jim thought, oh, this is normal. Well, here we are, you know, like almost 60 years later, and they have won one World Series since. And that was in 1986. So that was 40 years ago. So I'm still waiting for it to happen again. And, you know, and I'm a diehard. And I talk to a lot of people who, you know, are in the area or, you know, New York based. And it's like, oh, who do you root for, Mets or Yankees? 9 times out of 10, it's the Yankees. And I have to justify being a Met fan versus a Yankee fan. And my only argument I got is it's way too easy to be a Yankee fan. Way too easy. You're showing character, my friend, if you could be a Met fan.
Yeah, that's so I've heard the joke, you know, rooting for the Yankees is like going to a casino and rooting for the house to win.
Yes.
So I think that's and one other thing that could probably I had a teacher in high school who was a big Cubs fan, and his message about, you know, early fall usually was he'd send a message to all the girls, ladies, find yourself a Cubs fan to date because that man is loyal. And I feel like that could probably also apply to Mets fans.
It can, well, like one of my favorite little videos that I've sent to a lot of people, if you're a Family Guy fan, there's the little thing where it's Stewie is at a Mets opening day. First pitch to the opposing team, whacks it out of the ballpark. And again, the season's over.
Yeah.
That's what it's like through the years to be a Mets fan. And you just, you know, like I said, you have to hang in there. And when they win, though, and hopefully in my lifetime that will still happen, Dustin.
Yeah.
It will be worth it.
This goes on the stupidity of how these things control our lives. A lot of it, I do believe, as you mentioned, goes back to our childhood and having those fond memories, whatever it is. So one of the reasons why I'm a big Pacers fan is because when I was little, I had really bad asthma, and my dad would have to take me to Indianapolis to go to a children's hospital. Well, he would try to line those appointments up with Pacers games. So
that's
that was
a good dad, by the way. That's a good dad.
So we would – now, was it also for him to go to the games? Yeah, probably. But that was – so every time I think of the Pacers, so they went to the finals last year, and like they produced all these videos of how it's been 25 years. They never won a championship. This is our year. In 49 states, it's just basketball. Jim, the tears. And I'm just like, yeah, this is like in your, you know, in your logical brain, you recognize like this is really dumb, but it just brings back, I think, a lot of those memories when you're a kid. I think that's what a lot of it dates back to, because now, Like we don't have a lot in common with these athletes. We don't, if given the chance to hang out with most of them, we probably would pass, right?
Yeah.
But it represents something of a younger time when you were, you know, when you did look up to those athletes, even though they're not the same ones wearing the uniform.
Well, I have to share with you, you know, one of my favorite Met stories, and anytime we get even nudge up close to the topic, I want to share the story. In 1986, when the Mets won their last championship, it's the, you know, the game where the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs, and I don't know if you're old enough to remember or read about it. I was 26 years old and living in Philadelphia, okay? hated New York Mets. Everyone in Philadelphia hated the Mets more than anything. And I scheduled long ahead of time a party at my house. And it turned out it was long scheduled, didn't realize it, game six of that World Series, the Bill Buckner game. And everyone else there were Phillies fans except for me. And the game, of course, is not going my way. I'm livid. And they're all, as I put it, they're all drinking my beer, eating my food, and rooting against my team, Dustin, okay? I remember my girlfriend at the time comes over, and I'm seething. I am not happy. It's not fair. It's not right. I'm in my house hosting a party. I should be in a good mood, and I'm livid. And she comes up to me and says, behave yourself. I know, just keep your mouth shut. Don't start anything. And of course, the game progresses. Everything turns around. And I still, to this day, I can remember one of my friends sitting there late in the game when the Mets are making the rally, when they're behind. But before the rally, ooh, this is great. Gary Carter's going to make the last out. That's just, I hate that guy. And I'm livid. And then hit, ball through Buckner's legs. And the Mets end up winning the game. I'll tell you, you know what kind of talk the rest of the evening.
I know how that goes.
And it was one of my greatest moments as a fan. It really was, Dustin. Not only just enjoying it myself, but rubbing it in the face of Phillies fans.
That's always great. You know, the one thing that bothers me, and so here in St. Louis, my wife is a big Nebraska fan, and there's a group of people that get together at a bar who watch the Nebraska football games together for watch parties. There is nothing that, look, I want her team to win, so I root for them, but ultimately, again, you know, it doesn't impact me. But there, to me, even as, you know, someone who is not in as much invested in this as some of those other people, there's nothing worse than that one or two guys at the bar who are just there to play villain and root against everybody. Oh. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes they're just, you know, joking around, but there's other guys that really get into it. And I'm just like, I never hit anybody in public, but I'm tempted right now.
If ever I were, this would be the moment. All right, Dustin, we spent a segment on our rooting interests. I promise we will move on to other topics, and we're going to do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, where we usually talk about college football, Dustin, but we got off track on fandom, and I have actually two more points to make on the topic, if I may. One of them is you talked about going to that bar with your now wife, watching Nebraska football games, and there's the guys who have to play the villain, the bad guys. And again, I live much of my adult life in Philadelphia. So at Eagles games, there could be Cowboy fans.
Yeah.
At Phillies games, there could be Met fans. With Fire games, there could be Ranger fans or Penguin fans, you know. And it can get really, really ugly. And I'll give a story about that. But one of the great things I think about college sports is, it's not quite that way. Yes, you'll find some idiots. Yeah. But my experience has been so great. Like when we, years ago, Alabama and Penn State would play on a fairly regular basis. I've never been to Alabama for a game, but I'm told every Penn State fan I've talked to who has said it's been fantastic. They've been treated great. Mm-hmm. I went down to Auburn a couple years ago when Penn State played there. What a great experience with Auburn fans. I saw Penn State play in Madison against Wisconsin. What a great experience. And we always, especially like I mentioned, Alabama fans, but we do this all the time with opposing fans. We'll bring them over to our tailgate. Last year had a whole bunch of Oregon fans at our whiteout tailgate. We had so much fun with them. It's a different atmosphere in college sports than it is in the pros.
Yeah, it really is. I've been to not a ton, but a few road environments, and it's been like Wisconsin was very, they were very pleasant like that. I don't remember any sort of negative. I've been to other places where that's not been the case. I've heard stories about Ohio State from people that have been on the team. Yeah, and that's not very pleasant. So there's, I think there are some fan bases out there where, you know, if it's Ohio State, that is, I know that they've got a lot of sports teams there, but the Buckeyes are pretty much their pro sports team, right? And yeah. I think in some cases there's a lot of that. But I've heard a lot of good things about a lot of places, and it's just, it is odd that you don't seem to have that same sort of, it seems like every week at an NFL game, you have a fight, or, you know, the Dodgers and Giants, there's always somebody getting beaten up in the parking lot. You just don't seem to have that nearly as much in college sports, and hopefully it stays that way.
I hope so too. And like I said, just recently, it was just a couple years ago, I went down to Auburn and I wandered through tailgates. Boy, did I eat well with the Auburn fans. They were offering food and conversations. It was absolutely great. It was the same way when I was at Madison. Now, that was many years ago now, and I didn't buy a beer the entire weekend. You know, my favorite was we're walking through the parking lot, and I'm wearing a Penn State jersey, and a couple guys sitting on the top of an RV with their beer, and one of them yells out to me, "What's a Nittany Lion?" And I said, "Well, it's a lion indigenous to the Nittany Mountains of Pennsylvania that eats badgers." And guy cracked up laughing and said, "Come on over here. You got a drink with us." We spent a lot of time eating bratwurst and drinking beer at their tailgate. And to me, that's, you know, was the fun of college sports and college football in particular.
Yeah, we went to a Nebraska-Illinois game. I think Purdue had a bye week. Purdue played Saturday. This ended up being a Friday night game we went to. So we were able to watch both games. But Abby took a bunch of Jell-O shots for our tailgate. Well, there turned out, I think there was supposed to be more of us there, but there was only five or six. So she just went up to random tailgates, Illinois, Nebraska, and handed out Jell-O shots. And we were trading for, and we got all these great stories and met these people and tried their, you know, they had what was a butterscotch, like a butterscotch pudding shot almost. Jim was like, "Dessert, you could get drunk off dessert. It was so good." And I'm not even a big butterscotch guy, but that's the kind of thing that's fun. Like I think probably a majority of those, even at the pro level, that's probably what you get more than anything. But it seems like for whatever reason, I know the reason, people like to highlight the negative stuff. They like to highlight the fights. They like, you know, the trash talk, all that stuff. But for the most part, when I've gone to away games outside of, I could tell you some horror stories about Bloomington. But outside of those experiences, I mean, like for the most part, I think if you're not a rival, it's probably going to be, you're going to have a pretty good experience for the most part.
Well, and there's some idiots with every fan base.
Right,
and
right.
I could recall this was several years back again, in line, and there were some Ohio State fans with us. We were in line going up to a suite. So just the nature of the clientele there is a little, you know, upgrade. The Ohio State, many of them are wearing a blazer and, you know, dressed well. And I think they were students, Penn State students, who were walking by and see the Ohio State colors and pins and stuff. started chanting F the back Buckeyes, and it was just ridiculous and wrong, and as a Penn Stater, embarrassing.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, my take, I was, because I was had already started a conversation with one of the Ohio State fans, and I quickly apologized for it and said, you know, not all of our fans are quite that articulate and, you know, like that. We're really pretty decent. And the line took a while. We start chat. Just a wonderful conversation, even with an Ohio State fan, okay, where I've probably heard more stories about Buckeye fans than anywhere else and bad experiences in Columbus. But it's, I think the general rule of thumb is it is much better in college sports. I enjoy that. I hope that never goes away. And just to highlight the opposite, because I'll give one more Philadelphia story. Again, this is the same year as the Mets won in 1986. By this time, I had lived in Philadelphia long enough to know if I went to Veterans Stadium to see a Mets game, I do not wear any Mets gear. Just do not. I learned my lesson. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, my entire life, I've wanted to go watch a Pacers-Knicks game at Madison Square Garden. I don't know if you've seen some of the videos, Jim, of what happened during the finals and some of these other playoff runs. I'm considering rethinking that decision. I may just have to go to a Knicks random team game, because I still would like to go to the Madison Square Garden sometime. But I don't know if I think I would wear neutral colors to that game. Maybe, you know, just a sweater, try to fit in, just a sweater and jeans or something.
Well, it was my experience in going to the vet, one of the first times that I went, and I did have Met gear on, and I was with a local girl, a Phillies fan. So we walk into our section. Turns out it's a group of Mets fans who made the road trip. Nice. I appeared out in the section. I got a standing ovation so for wearing the Mets gear, which was kind of cool. But soon thereafter, I learned my lesson. I stopped doing that. Well, now in 1986, the Mets came into town. They were ahead in the division by like 20 games, okay? It was inevitable. They're winning the division. But they went into Philadelphia to clinch. So, like New Jersey between Philly and New York, so the state is split. So there's a lot of Mets fans who were not far from Philadelphia. Well, they came in and were trying to take over the vet. Dustin, it got so ugly. The fights, the brawls. No. And the Philadelphia police or security group did not help the cause any. Dustin, literally, they're dragging fans down the steps, the cement steps, by their legs, which means the head is bouncing on the steps. It was not pretty. I was so glad I didn't wear Met gear. Went all three nights, to my dismay and to every other Met fan, the Phillies swept the Mets.
Oof.
Okay. So they didn't clinch there in Philly, and it got so ugly. Fast forward now about 30 years, and I happen to be somewhere, and I bump into Howard Johnson, who was on that New York Met team, and I had the opportunity to chat with him for a while, and I brought it up, and I said, you know, 1986, I lived in Philadelphia, and I went to, and he goes, I know, you went when we came to clinch it, and we lost all three games, right? I said, yes. And he goes, don't remind me. I think everyone who's ever attended those games as Met fans have let me know that same story. That was the long postscript. It took many years for that to happen. But, you know, with that said, Dustin, I still think what we're talking about with college sports and what makes it so special is these other things where you mentioned going to Madison Square Garden, seeing a Knicks game would be on your bucket list, something to do. I get it. But I think there's so many more venues, say in college football, that you could say, you know, I really want to go to a game there.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, you just in the Big Ten alone, think about you've got Beaver Stadium, Ohio Stadium, Michigan Stadium, Altman Stadium, the Coliseum, the Rose Bowl. There are some historic venues, Camp Randall. Like, there are some really Memorial Stadium. There's three Memorial Stadiums, but the one in Lincoln. Like, there are some. There's a lot of stadiums that are old or have a lot of really cool history. Or so, yeah. I mean, just expand that across the country. And I've been fortunate enough to go to, you know, I've been to, even if you look at the SEC, I've been to Auburn, I've been to Ole Miss, LSU, I've been to Florida. Just the opportunity to take in a lot of those venues, it's really cool.
Well, real quickly, at Beaver Stadium for a whiteout game, we host tailgates from people from the opposing team, but they could come from anywhere. And just last year, as an example, we had all these people from like Boston, some from Chicago. And, you know, it's like, what are you doing here? They're like, are you kidding? It's a whiteout.
Yeah.
We wanted to see a whiteout. We have zero rooting interest. Okay.
Right.
But we just wanted to know what it was about, why. Then, you know what? Those fans have never been disappointed. All right, Dustin, that's going to have to be it for quarter number two. You know what? How about come quarter three, we go back to my notes and we hit our agenda. We'll do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number three of our show. And how about we get into some current news in college football, Dustin, and the Brendan Sorsby story just won't go away. We may be tired of it already, but trust me, my friend, I suspect we're going to be hearing about it for a while. But I wanted to talk to you a bit about, now that the ruling has been made, I still think there's a very good chance that he doesn't play this year, that from the fallout. But I did want to get your take on the reaction, the fallout from all of it. And let's start with Texas Tech and the position they're in. And first of all, why don't they just keep their mouth shut?
Yeah, you would think that a school would have a PR agent or PR agency that would just be like, you know what, how about we stop talking right now? Because they just keep digging themselves a bigger hole. And they keep trying to justify this in a couple different ways. One, that you're, you know, college sports has become so intertwined with gambling. Okay, well, a lot of sports has, and it's still illegal on, or not illegal, but against the rules in multiple sports, and there are harsh consequences for those. And then the second thing, you know, is that they're doing what's in the best interest of Brendan Sorsby. And they phrase it as though there's not another option to this. And I think I said last week, Jim, or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, I have no problem if Brendan Sorsby is a member of the team, if he's on the sidelines, if he participates in practice, travels with the team, to give him some sort of structure and give him some sort of purpose. Doesn't mean he has to play. Like, there are ways, like, getting him help and standing behind him is finding, you know, helping support him with counseling, with, you know, if he needs to go into a rehabilitation or whatever the case might be. I don't know. I'm not an expert. But it's just like, well, yeah, he needs to play football. That's what's going to help him. I'm like, really? That doesn't seem to make sense to me, because I'm always of the belief that people should get a second chance, but your second chance doesn't have to be in the thing that you were participating in earlier. Like, this is still it's not a right. It's a privilege to play college football, to play.
You know, I think the analogy to it is, well, he's a recovering gambler. when he's done with the football games on Saturday, I think he should go directly to a casino. And those with a drinking problem, I think they should spend most of their time in a bar.
Bar, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially what they're saying, you know, being on the football field. And that's where I hear what you're saying. And I think to discipline players by not letting them play on Saturday, but have the structure of being a part of the team and practicing all week. I get it. I understand what you're talking about. My only issue with it is you're putting the bottle in front of him. Okay, sure. Which is you're exposing him to his teammates and, ooh, gee, our backup quarterback, he's kind of nicked up. Well, he's playing, but he's probably not at 100%. Boy, that's probably going to help me. You know, I could place a bet strategically here. And I think it would create – it's exposing him to that temptation.
Sure.
But – what I do understand is and agree with is creating structure. I mean, he's still a college student, right?
Right.
Are you helping him, you know, get his focus back on the classroom, taking his classes, the rehabilitation? And again, I'm not an expert either, just like you stated, but I'm thinking, Dustin, that 1 week he spent at a retreat in Arizona, I'm not sure he's walking away from that cured.
No, I can promise you, again, I'm not going to get into the details, but from people around me, I can promise you that's not how quickly that works. That's not how any of it works. So, you know, and here's the other thing. I get a little irritated, probably a lot of irritated, when people continue to use the mental health or an addiction. That's true. And I have seen that firsthand, how that can, you know, basically overtake your life. Jimmy still made the decision to place that very first bet, knowing that what the consequences would be. It's the same. You know what? I'm not going to use that analogy because it would probably get me in trouble. But it's, you know,
here, Dustin. We're going to get you in trouble.
It's toning. It would be the same as if somebody who suffered from alcoholism drank a couple beers and got into a fist fight at a bar and was charged with, you know, assault. And was like, well, it wasn't me. It was my addiction. Okay. You have a problem, but you're still going to face the consequences for your actions. And so it doesn't matter. I shouldn't say it doesn't matter. Like, there is an understanding that yes, you may have a problem or an addiction or whatever the case might be, or a disease, whatever the case might be, you still have consequences for those actions. You still made the decision to do certain things. And like you have to pay the punishment there. And so that's why I don't understand. Like, yes, you can, multiple things can be true. There can be a problem that Brendan Sorsby needs to address, but he also made the decision to place the bet. No, even if he made one bet on his own team, Jim, he should be done.
Exactly. And that's been the precedent. And one of the things, and maybe now I'm treading into questionable territory here myself, Dustin, but yes, if you want to define, you know, alcoholism, drug addiction, gambling addiction as diseases, okay, fair enough. But there is still a difference between that and other diseases where you had zero control over it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. You couldn't consciously, you know, I'm sure we all had people who suffered from different diseases close in our life. They did nothing to bring this on themselves. There was no conscious decision they could have made. And that's with the alcoholism, with gambling, he still chose to gamble. So that point that you're making, I think, is valid. Now, it's about how everybody else is reacting to it. And everybody, it's easy now to get up on the soapbox. We're not going to schedule them. We're not. Well, the Big Ten has already essentially stated, well, we're not really going to do anything about it. And now the Big 12 is in a situation where a couple of their ADs have come out ranting and raving about it. All right. Are you going to do anything about it? Are you going to not schedule Texas Tech? Are you going to force them to forfeit their games? Are you going to not let them get to the championship game? Are you going to do any of those things, or was it all just performative?
Yeah, I think that that's a good question. I think from the other conferences, it is performative. I do believe from the Big 12 that they are serious, because I just saw they've filed a legal complaint in a federal court against Texas Tech and the Texas Attorney General. So basically, the Big 12 is saying, look, we have to be able to enforce our rules. And I don't think that it's going to be against Brendan Sorsby. They want to be able to say, hey, look, he can play, but if he plays, we withhold the right to prevent you from playing in our conference championship game, which then inhibits your ability to make the college football playoff. Or we can vacate your wins, or they count as four, whatever the case might be. So if they can do that, then they would have some level of control over the situation. So I do actually believe the Big 12 is serious. But again, part of this, Jim, to me, is does the Big 12 also know that, hey, guess what? If Brendan Sorsby is playing, guess how many eyeballs are going to be on every game every week? And what does that mean in terms of television dollars? So the Big 12 can also push forward with a lot. Now, the other part of this is do gambling websites get involved, or, you know, companies, and say, hey, we don't trust the integrity of your games anymore, so we're going to withhold our
take it off the board.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm sure it's a very intricate situation that is way beyond my pay grade. So it's very, but I get the sense that the Big 12 is serious. I don't think the other conferences are serious, because you're going to have situations where you have to schedule that team.
Well, yeah. What are you going to do if you bump into Texas Tech in the NCAA tournament, or correct, any other sport in, you know, championship? Are you going to stick to your word and say, hey, we're not playing against them, and if it means we forfeit, we forfeit, because our integrity is at stake? I'm betting we all know the answer to that question. My issue with all of this is still with Texas Tech and the rest of the university. You're the president of that university. Do you not have some integrity there to say, you know what? Yes, we'd rather win at football games, but our integrity is worth more than our starting quarterback.
So these are questions that I've wanted to get answered, and I've actually spoken with an attorney on this. So part of it is there could be Texas Tech standing behind him, quote unquote, because they also don't want to face a lawsuit. There could be a level to that where, I don't know what the case would be, but, you know, if he wins a lawsuit against the NCAA, can he win a similar lawsuit against Texas Tech? Now, the thing would be is if Joey McGuire just said, well, you're not good enough to be our starting quarterback. Like, how do you define that in a court of law, right? So that's one thing. The other part of this is Cody Campbell, the big booster who is funding basically all of Texas Tech, it feels like at this point. Is he in the room saying, do you want your NIL money or do you not? Because Brendan Sorsby is going to play as long as I'm writing checks. And if he doesn't play, then I'm not going to write your check anymore. If you make the decision, let me say it that way, if you make the decision not to play him, then I'm not going to donate any more money. Is there a threat there? So I'm with you on this, because I think Texas Tech should do something and should stand up and say, you know what? Our integrity is too important. It's just a game. We'll have another quarterback. It'll be fine. And I think that they should make that step. But I do also wonder if there's outside forces that are forcing them, for lack of a better term, to stand behind Brendan Sorsby, when otherwise they might be like, eh, you know what? It's best to just cut our losses on this one.
You brought up a good point that I didn't think of is, you know, Cody Campbell, with his outsized reach with Texas Tech and now nationally, okay, which we're going to talk more about, but does he have that influence? But again, as a university, if there's a single alum who's a major contributor and he says, I'm going to shut off that spigot, you know what? Somebody somewhere, Dustin, has to be able to say, you know what? Our integrity is worth more than your millions of dollars. We love having it, but not at the expense of the reputation of our university. We'll talk more about that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number four of our show. And Dustin, we continue talking about this topic off the air. And we were talking more about Cody Campbell. That's who we were talking about when we left, who's has the outsized influence at Texas Tech. He brings the money. He's part of the board. He's actually testified in the before Congress. Part of that bill that's going to fix college football, and I'm using air quotes here. But the question you had, the question, I'll let you talk about it on the air. You know, how much would they lose out if they decided not to play Brendan Sorsby?
I don't think it can be. I just don't think it's going to be. Now, I don't know Texas Tech's roster, but I can't imagine that it's that he's that great of a quarterback that you think your playoff hinges on. Like, this guy couldn't win the job at Indiana when Indiana wasn't very good. Now, I know he was better and he had a good season at Cincinnati, but is he really the one guy that you think is going to be the difference maker? But I mean, obviously they do, because if there was a tight quarterback race and he was a 50-50, I don't think they're having this argument. If this was a third string offensive tackle, he'd be gone. So they must believe that he is good enough to get them to the playoff and challenge for a championship, because otherwise I don't think they'd be doing all of this to ruin their reputation and be in the news this long. This feels like the longest anything's been in the news for a long, long time, like one single situation.
And by the way, you know, I think sometimes the thought is, and I believe they probably have this thought too, just let it end the news in the news cycle. Okay. Yeah. And we have, you know, over and over again, examples. I always bring up the woman who's on NBC's Today Show, and her mother was kidnapped or whatever. Remember, in the beginning, day to day, wall to wall coverage. When's the last time you heard anything about it, Dustin?
It's and been by a the long way, time.
I don't think they found her, but the news cycle ends. The thing here with Brendan Sorsby is it won't leave, because there'll be questions to other people. Other people will react to it, conferences, teams. Then when the fall hits, where you hit the two games where he is going to sit out, there'll be attention to those games. Then the third game, when he finally does play, guess what? The attention again. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Later on in the season, they play Cincinnati. Again, all the focus will be there. So it's not, the story's not going to go away, Dustin.
No, it's not. It's going to be if he plays, it's going to be the foremost story in college football. I don't know every week, but for a lot of weeks, it will be. It'll be the headline. He's probably going to get, like I said, it's going to be like watching Duke basketball back in the coach, and they probably still do it now, but the best thing for the NCAA tournament is for Duke to keep winning, because people will hate watch Duke, right?
Like, exactly.
If Penn State makes a tournament, Penn State fans are watching, fans of the other team are watching, but nobody's tuning in to hate watch Penn State basketball, right? So people are going to tune in to hate watch Texas Tech, hope they lose, and you know, so it will continue to be a big story. I don't think this one's one that will go away. It might get quieted at, but even to this point, Jim, that's going to be a question for probably every commissioner at their respective media days, SEC, Big 12, Big 10. Who am I missing? ACC. So, you know, it's going to be a topic of conversation, not only as the Big 12 and other places maybe take legal action, but also we're a month away from media days. And then in another month, we have the start of the season. So it's going to continue to be in the news cycle.
And it will be a distraction at all of those media days. Mm-hmm. Then a couple things, you know, have we heard the end of the stories? Our colleague here on the show, Mike Villagrana, he brought the question, he says, who now has a bone to pick with him? Who knew him, either back at Indiana or back at Cincinnati? What right. if there's more to the story and that comes out? Or what about this, Dustin? Because you know there's other collegiate players who have bet on the sport and bet on their team. You know that's out there. What happens when that goes public and becomes news? What then, Dustin?
I have a feeling that what you said is, and I don't know how they uncover it, but my guess would be, now here's what I do know, Jim, and I don't know if this is at every institution or just certain ones, but I have someone close to me works in an athletic department, and I don't know how this works, but it does. If somebody downloads a betting app or goes to a betting website, the compliance department immediately gets a notification and says, hey. So I would guess that there's been a lot of notifications that we don't know of. I bet there's a lot of players who have, you know, placed bets through other people that we don't know of. But there's going to be a push, I think, to get some of this out in the open. And are we going to see a lot of college football players suspended? Their career's over. What's going to happen if you have, you know, let's just say 250 players all of a sudden who you find? Now that's probably a low number considering the number of college football players, but that's still a relatively large, you know, in one type of situation. What happens then? Do they all get suspended? I know what my answer would be, but there's going to be some interesting things that I think come from this, because I don't think the investigations into this stuff are done by a long shot.
Well, there's a lot of different permutations of how this could come up, Dustin, but how about this? A player on a major team, but he's not a major player.
Yeah.
He's the third team left guard. It's very easy for the university then to get on their high horse in the soapbox and say, hey, the integrity of XYZ state is the most important thing. That young man will not suit up for our school because that's the way we roll. Now, it's not your starting quarterback, so it's a little easier to roll that way. So it's going to be fascinating to see as this goes forward. I think the other fallout of this, Dustin, is there is that bill in Congress, whatever they're calling it, Save College Sports or something. And yeah, it's like, okay, no one within the NCAA or the conferences were able to control this containment. So I think the mindset is we need Congress to step in. And that was my initial thought. So are we closer to that? I'll ask you that, but consider this. Cody Campbell, of all people, has been involved in that and making it go. So how does the Cody Campbell factor into this make people less likely to endorse it?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, excuse me, I think if you had this, I feel like this is the snowball that gets Congress involved more than anything, because there's so many different players involved here. Like, you're going to have you could have people in organized crime get involved. You could have, you know, the integrity of the sport. There's a lot of money at stake here and in different states. So I do think that there's a level where government intervention now is going to be necessary, especially if Brendan Sorsby takes a snap. Now, if he doesn't, does this delay the process? Maybe so. Yeah, the Cody Campbell thing makes it even more interesting because he's been talking about how I'm trying to help fix college sports. Well, no, you're really not. Because I know I know that there's been some accusations of tampering with the softball team with other players, and somehow you continually get the top prospects in the transfer portal. That's neither here nor there. But he's like he is on that all high and mighty. I'm doing everything I can. Well, no, you're not. So is there a push to separate him from this? I don't know. It's a great question, but clearly something has to be done from a governmental level where schools and leagues, maybe not the NCAA, I don't know, have to be able to enforce their rules. Otherwise, it's going to be more of what we've seen, and that's basically just a free-for-all.
Well, you know, I've often asked the questions of guests on this show, college football needs to be cleaned up. It needs to be fixed. Well, what exactly is broken? You know, we're getting more parity. We're getting more people watching. And there's a lot of very good things to it. And I'm looking, though, at this incident as one of the things that more people see it and are saying, hey, wait a minute. You ask what the problem is. There it is. And this, I think, might bring more public opinion into force with something needs to be done and there needs to be some authority somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, cause you can't just have, I've said this multiple times, like if there's not going to be what prevents people from just doing whatever they want and then taking it to court, if there's not going to be any consequence for anything you do, then why would you follow the rules? And it really is kind of a slap into the face to all the kids who are doing things the right way, which I do believe, by the way, is a majority of them. I don't think that this is a problem where it's 80% of student athletes. It's probably, I think it's a lot more than we think, but it's probably lower in terms of just general numbers. But you've got to have some sort of penalty. You have to have some sort of enforceable rule because you're right. Like, and to me, I think this all, again, comes back to collective bargaining contracts, and then you agree to the punishments that are at the table. And when you're able to do that, it's going to make things a lot easier.
Yeah, I think it has to hit that point. And you're going to see, again, as you said, there's no rules. We also saw, you know, Dabo Swinney come out and talk about Ole Miss tampering. And he had the evidence. He had the receipts. He had it all there. Guess what? Has anything happened to Ole Miss because of it? So that sets the precedent for everybody else. Hey, you could tamper. They're not going to do anything about it. There's evidence. Don't care. Doesn't matter, Dustin. Ole Miss just goes along their merry way.
Yep. You've got to be able to have something, some sort of enforceable rule. And I think that's the big thing that people are upset about. I think money's involved and people don't mind that as much, but it is if I'm Illinois or I'm Purdue and I go 7-5, I've had a great season compared to my own standards. And then if I've got a majority of my production returning, well, you know, Texas or Alabama, somebody's going to get involved and I can't continue that momentum into the next season.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Dustin, that is the final word for our show. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.